No, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that was your mouth. The mic's right over there. Anyway, hello, this is Alex here with our new intergalactic lawyer, who currently represents the interests behind the Legends version of our show, which is confusing, the Star Wars New Canon Book Club, where Jesse Davis and I sort of haphazardly followed along with Disney's version of Star Wars for about half a decade, for better or for worse, and which ended unceremoniously in late 2020. Anyway, we seem to have come to some sort of agreement regarding the future of the Swinnak Back Archive, and it seems to be all good now, so I'll let my esteemed guest explain, and then I'll translate. He's very happy to be able to make these episodes available to you now after they've been away for so long. He says that while they were in the vault, they had their archivists organize and remaster all the episodes and place them into four definitive collections, which they'll be releasing again over the next few months in partnership with us. He says they're going to be permanently hosted on our Patreon page, but that they're fully 100% free for all listeners, and that it's very important to them that nobody have to pay for access to a bunch of stuff we recorded half a decade ago that everybody already listened to for free for years. But yeah, Swinnak Back Collection 1 is available now only at patreon.com/SWOCBC. That's patreon.com/SWOCBC. It's almost 20 hours of remastered content. Go there, check it out, have a look around, give them a listen if it pleases you, and may the Force be with you. Please enjoy this month's Star Wars Inside the Insider.
The Star Wars Old Canon Book Club is made possible by contributions on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/SWOCBC for ad-free episodes, reading guides, movie and TV episode audio watch-alongs, and more. Today's old canon fact of the day comes from Star Wars, the new essential guide to alien species by Anne Margaret Lewis and Helen Kaya, first published in 2006. Because religion is so important to Ewok society, the village shaman governs a tribe side by side with the ruling chieftain. The shaman interprets signs to guide the chieftain in his decisions, and their belief system includes references to a living energy, similar to the Force, that feeds the trees and likewise strengthens and guides the Ewoks. Today's selection is Caravan of Courage, an Ewok adventure, a television film by John Corti, first broadcast by ABC on November 25th, 1984. Enjoy the show, and may the Force be with you, always.
Yub, motherfucking nub, my feechin beaches, my feechin beachas,
feechin beaches?
My feechin beachas.
Oh boy.
Welcome to part one of the...
I was more hyped going into this than I am having seen it.
No, I'm still...
Now I'm where you
I'm
are
warned,
at,
y'all.
Where we, like, we have to get to another one
I'm
of these.
Still totally, warned, I'm still totally hyped because there's an arc here, guys. We're going to love this by the end. You got to understand, we're going to love our Ewok.
No, that's not true.
This is the crucible that we have to undertake before we get to
Look,
read
I like
Heir
Ewoks
to
just fine, but I like coherent story more.
Okay. So. C-3PO, R2-D2,
have we already done like an Ewoking before we can run?
No.
Kind of joke?
No, but maybe we did that during the
Video?
During the,
maybe.
Yeah, because we were Ewok, EW, yeah,
we
and a lot
we
of
were
stuff.
High on Ewoks at the time. Yeah. So.
Dude, the Ewoks?
So first of all, I should say instead
you,
of an
you don't
outline,
want to do this.
I should say instead of an outline for this one, if you want your extra, go sign up on the Patreon for this one because it's a complete watch through of this movie with the three of us who went in with the openest of minds, the most.
I lived this in real time, so no, I didn't.
I even to the climax, I still had an open mind.
There was still good stuff
when they showed that like sick spider web. I was like,
there's still good stuff,
and they're gonna bring it home, and then it was like.
Halloween.
Spirit Halloween. Yeah. I was like, no, not like this.
But the movie still has good stuff. The movie still has good stuff. That's the whole.
Let none of us deny that the greatest Ewok who ever lived is in this film, and he died a hero's death, and I will never forget whatever his name was.
He was about twice the height of any other Ewok.
I love that.
He was almost a Wook. He was like an Ewok.
I love that guy. Yeah. He was, what a hero.
The Spock of
the Ewoks. He had an axe, and he could throw that thing like nobody's business.
Yeah. Caravan of Courage came out November 25th, 1984. It was a TV special. I have a quote.
So we're not even, oh God.
Yeah.
We're not even there in the.
Yeah.
Wait, have we officially caught up to the fan?
No, we're not. The fan magazine like slows down because of how much stuff we're about to run
into. We're in the
90s. Once we read the comic version of Ewoks and Droids, it's a final combination of these two.
I'm saying this first one came out in 94?
84.
I'm so stupid. Continue.
Just look at it.
I just got wrong. You said 94, and I was like,
I didn't.
No way. You didn't say that, but my brain heard you.
Yeah. I got a quote here from.
Sometimes you just fuck up, you know? Like, yeah, we're fallible creatures.
We're fine with it too. We're like your Ewok caravan of courage. Yeah. We got your back.
It fucked me up so bad. I forgot decades.
You forgot how many tens of
my
years
brain like had to just black out a lot of information to protect me.
George Lucas's personal assistant, Bob Carrow,
aka Bob the Movie.
He's Bob the Movie of this movie. George Lucas wrote the story of this movie, and Bob wrote the like actual script of this movie, actually wrote the screenplay. Quote from him is, "People were expecting Star Wars on TV, which was what we never intended to do. We were much more interested in telling a story that was a more exciting and contemporary version of Goldilocks and the Three Bears."
I hate those words that you just said out loud. I hate everything about that.
But it's true. That's kind of what the vibe was.
What do you mean? You can't just say it's, but it's true.
I mean, that's the guy who wrote it saying that they weren't setting out to make a star. It's like very much a similar vibe.
You're right. It is not Star Wars.
I guess like
Indiana Jones, right? Like it was not like we were just talking about in Inside the Insider. Like young Indiana Jones is not the same content as Indiana Jones. This is like an Ewok deal. This is like not a...
It's like two sides of the same coin, except for one has like... It seems like it's just an incredible show. Like the Indiana Jones Chronicles.
Yes, I just
it's a different
mean,
vibe, but it's like incredibly thought out and good. And this was like... Not,
well,
never,
we were talking about, labels. We were talking about labels in Inside the Insider about how it would be nice to label the different like verticals of Star Wars.
Well, that's because there's expectations. And I feel like indie... This, everything, when you create something and it's like, oh, this is that, but not, you're already alienating fans from jump.
Definitely.
And so it's crazy because indie, while it is quality, only got two seasons and was immediately canceled. And anyone who thinks about it only thinks about it through the aspect of like, remember that? Didn't they do that once?
That was just the ratings. That was just the ratings.
Same thing. This is like. Remember when they made Ewok, like, what was that? That was so weird. It's because it's not them having to say this isn't what you expect is like a bad thing from just like a marketing standpoint of getting eyes on it. It's another project.
I definitely agree. But if we as like cultural critics, right, like Star Wars historians or whatever we're doing, whatever the fuck we're doing, whatever the show is, if we consider it as this, like, if we try to look at it from their perspective and consider this like
from a creative, I've done this while making my own stuff.
Right.
Where I thought, oh, people like this one thing, so I'll make something.
They're saying,
it's like the same thing with the what's the robot movie that just came out where they had the Megan. The first one's a horror movie.
Yes.
And the second one, they tried to make it like Terminator 2, and everyone was like, what the shit is this? Same vibe.
Yes.
But exact same vibe as the audience wasn't ready. Yeah. We're wanting it.
To the credit of George Lucas and Bob Carroll, I think what they were trying to do was they were saying, okay, the Ewok verse, if you want to call it that, is like, and it's not separate in like a barrier between universes way. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying like in the way that X-Men and Avengers don't call each other on the phone, even though they should, like they just, you know, don't do that often. Like the Ewoks... It's like, oh, this is our opportunity to tell like childlike fantasy tales and fairy tales almost in a Star Wars brand. I think is like just to give them the full
Like, I did not like this. I'm not trying to say this was actually good, actually, but I'm just trying to say, I think what I'm looking at here from the perspective of like a sociologist or some shit,
sure,
is that they were trying to do, hey, we have this like world where we can tell these like childlike stories with Ewoks that are like, they don't go outside the world of Endor. They don't really like, they treat Endor like Middle Earth. And the Ewoks are like these characters, and they do little sort of like kid things. And so when he's saying Goldilocks and the Three Bears, it kind of is Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It's like a story that works like that. And like, I don't know what the lesson.
It's kind of more like Jack and the Giant Beanstalk or whatever by the end.
It's a mix of those tropes. Yeah, it's a mix of those tropes.
It's definitely like, I get that it's a genre difference.
Yeah.
It's just weird, like, I'm thinking about, like, wasn't he also disgusted, like, how he was with the early comics with the Star Wars special? And it's like, this, the next time they go on television, I don't think it's better. Well, I actually, like, I don't think...
Star Wars special more, I'll be honest.
At least it has, like, more... It, like, rotates, it, like, flips out, and they have the, like, benefit of being like, none of us is Lucas! We just did the best we could! This is, like, Lucas wrote the story. Joe Johnston... like produced there, but like,
well, we'll see. I'll get to that in a little bit deeper in a minute too.
It didn't shoot on a stage. It got to like shoot where they shot.
I looked into like how Joe Johnston relates to this and his career and stuff. And I got a good quote from him that I'll get to in just a second. Okay. It's pretty good. It's pretty fun. Cause we were like literally saying like these things as we were watching it almost like with regard to like, I don't know. We were very right about this movie in a lot of ways that I didn't think when I looked into the production a little more.
I don't want to be dismissive to like what the film, you know, this TV movie is.
Yeah.
But with it does have kind of like the vibe of, we got Ewoks in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like a gimmicky, fun little thing included. Like, here's an alien race.
Porg-like.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. And it has the same vibe as when, you know, you think of a Saturday Night Live character who has a 5 or 7 minute skit that then gets a full movie.
Yeah.
And you're like, how on earth did they think this was wise?
Yeah, they just bobbed their heads to the side. Night at the Roxbury didn't need to be an entire film.
Same thing here, where it's kind of like they took a little tiny cutie pies that were there to amplify this one scene of like the bear, little tiny teddy bears are fighting the Empire. And they're like, we're going to make a whole story where none of them speak English. And when they do, it's jarring as hell. The fact that Wicket is like, Starship! And you're like, what the shit? Like, it's crazy.
It is absolutely fucking weird. There's like a weird clashing like nature documentary vibe.
Kind of makes you look at Chewbacca and you're like,
they got Burl Ives, who is the narrator of those like beautiful Rankin Bass Christmas specials,
sure,
like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And so it brings this like fairy tale-ness to it. But then there's this like David Attenborough.
It does have like also the first book, how it was like told like this, where it was like a guy telling the story of Star Wars.
Right. But then it also kind of like tells you about Ewok culture. Like, he like does asides that just like are like more
these
like
frisky little critters.
More documentarian.
They love their Ewoks.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is a movie where it's set in Star Wars, is Star Wars. But then, like, this crystal turns into a lizard.
Yeah.
And they're like, what does that mean? Is that the Force? What are the rules here? Like, no, it's Ewok magic.
They're like, this is not.
But the lizard is bad, but the mouse is good.
No, I think I get it. I think I get, like I say, okay, here's what I think happened in broad strokes, right? And this is based off also facts, but like.
Do you think cocaine was involved?
If George is that type of guy.
I'm not saying George.
Well, if it was anybody, it was George and Bob.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But here's what happened is George has the idea for an Ewok special after Return of the Jedi because he wants to try TV again with his like new resources because he's like now the like Star Wars man. And he has like this like machine of like movie making behind him and stuff. And his daughter Amanda loves the Ewoks. So he wants to make like an Ewok thing. And I think he comes up with a 30-minute idea for an Ewok thing, okay? The 30-minute version of probably this story, which probably has the exact same beats, but is over a third of the less than a third of the length. And then they pitch it
Producer Thomas Smith pitches it to everybody who turns it down, except for ABC, who's interested, except it has to now fill 2 hours of television. So he, so Lucas says, quote, "I hadn't done any TV, and it was a chance to use many people in the company who hadn't had much experience with live action production and experiment a little." So he says the economics of TV are vastly different than the economics of film. It was done for very little money. So what he's doing here is he's doing this like little.
This makes sense based on what I read in the Insider, where he's like, he's feeling out like television production to see how he can like use that in other ways. Like
see if people that are close to him, like this guy Bob, who's his assistant, see if this guy can then become like a guy who makes these for him or like whatever they need to do in the TV world. And so it seems like
the Pixar shorts, they originally started as a way to test out talent to maybe direct future stuff.
Yeah.
But then they ended up just being like, no, but
right,
we made some cool shorts.
But that's the vibe with this, and I think we'll see like the next one is going to be a lot stronger because it's going to be.
It doesn't make it better.
No.
But I totally.
I don't think this is good.
I'm like,
I don't think this is good.
I believe that more than that last quote, the first quote you started with, which sounded like, well, it was supposed to be bad. This being like, oh no, this was a like basically a dress rehearsal. Like this makes it seem a lot more real. Like this actually, I believe this is what they were doing.
I don't think it helps the final product, but I do think that culturally we're going to see like comparing specifically to like the Star Wars holiday special. I think we're going to see like once we watch the next one and the cartoon and read the comics, I think there's going to be a little bit more meat to this idea of Ewok fantasy children world thing. Than just this like really dumb story that they told here. I think this was supposed to be like a little lesson about friendship that they pulled out into a 90-minute fucking movie that was like completely.
Eventually, it literally becomes Lord of the Rings in some spots.
Also, it's like crazy. Just so every scene is like so elongated, and they use every single shot that they made. And like, I don't think they like decided halfway through to make it long. I just think they didn't really rewrite the script and just shot a longer version. And
it's just wild how it can be so rushed and drawn out. Like it's drawn out, and then it's like the scene where Galadriel gives them all their like little quest Ewok objects, and then it's like bam, 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 bam. Like imagine if right away they used all their like they ate the lamb's bread, they used everything.
Probably because that scene was like written and moves at the pace of like what the 30-minute version was. But I do think they didn't even audition outside of local for any part except for like Warwick Davis and the Ewoks, who they just hired again.
Sure. It's like local theater.
Because they fit the costumes.
But also they have stuff from the movie, so it makes a very.
Yeah. That's exactly.
And they shot in the real forest, so it's very dissonant.
It came out in November. They didn't start shooting till April.
Yikes.
Pre-production started in April. They didn't start shooting till June.
Everything about it, from the weird spiders to everything else, checks out now. If you're telling me they rushed it, that part felt
rushed.
Well,
it's not even that they rushed it. They just like made a fucking cheap ass thing.
Yeah.
And
I'm really, the thing I'm curious about that I wish. I know no one keeps this information around, but you said they went around and pitched it to other studios. I would love to know what those discussions were, because these are the people that said no.
Right.
So there, I would love to know their reasons for saying no to Star Wars.
Yeah, they pitched it to networks. Yeah,
this is wild.
Everyone but ABC said no.
Because he owned it. It's his thing.
No, I know. It's just weird. Like we're in the space where we do a lot of brand deals, and they're never as much as you would want. But you're sort of like, companies will be like, we got this coming out. We have this much money for you. And you're like, what can I, like, you like think about what can you throw together? And it's not always the best thing, but it's what you got. The idea that they were like, no, we're going to pitch this. I thought we talked about like the TV or whatever. They were like, hey, look, we're doing these TV movies. Here's your budget. What can you do? But the idea that they were like, we stand behind this and we are pitching it is like.
Well, I think that's probably.
There's a lot in my brain.
That's probably why ABC picked it up, because they were doing those Saturday night movies.
Yeah. It's also Thanksgiving. This came out, so it's the 25th of November. So it's literally like fucking Thanksgiving, which is perfect for us.
It's basically a holiday special of a different kind.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but it's like a round two, and this one also isn't that great. But I will say, just as a thing, it's a lot better, like, shot and made. Other than the content, I think everything else was way better than the holiday special, which was, like, made like a, like, something from the 50s. Like, it was, like, a, like, made on, like, a soundstage.
Production, like, wise and value-wise, I agree. I think that the thing that, like, also messes with me, and I don't know if you guys care as much, the, like, color grading, the, like,
actually, every scene was a little different.
Shot, yeah. Actually, though, it looks so different that at least the holiday special is consistent.
I, like, want to say, like,
it makes
say,
it feel cheaper because...
I want to say, the version that we watched on Disney Plus, there was something going on.
Oh, do you think there was, like, an auto...
I rewatched it to QC the video version of this for Patreon, and the colors are, like, much more muted and much more 80s, how you would expect them to be, and look very consistent and treated and real. And so I think what happened here was that they did some kind of fake HDR processing to it or something and messed up. Because you were talking about how bright the colors were?
Well, from one scene, the orange would change dramatically.
No, yeah, no, exactly. Actually, all of that was, like, a very solid color of brown. But because of the temperature of the scenes, it was, like, artificially saturating and desaturating the scenes.
But still, I feel like, in a general sort of look at it, if that's the case, then still those scenes, there's some issue from shot to shot.
There is also, like, because they shot in places that had both shade and not shade.
That looked the day for night especially was
like sweet. I get if it that's bad, but like I get if like you have a set amount of time, you just have to go, but like you normally put up a big like screen so that you at least have consistent shadowing, even if you're doing it out or not. That they didn't do that, regardless of the color grading, is like another. It looks like they're in a different place, even though they're clearly the same place.
100%. Also. What was I going to say? Another thing that I didn't realize, and this makes perfect sense, is that, like, this is not a location shoot because Lucas is in Marin. So it's like, the reason this is...
Did they shoot this in
the Redwoods? Okay. So, but it's because, like, it's not
so
even...
basically backyard.
It's not that far. This was like a cost saving. Like the reason it all works.
It's like
is,
when we would like steal shots at the game station, like on Washington and just be like, watch out for cops.
Yeah. We're in LA, baby.
Except they probably paid for the shooting rights.
I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. But yeah, like, no, literally like the idea works well because they get to shoot in the Return of the Jedi sets. Basically, except it's just they're driving to the wilderness near them. So as much as it feels like they're like, I think a lot of the trick of it even being something that might look nice was kind of an accident. And there's more like that. It shot for 8 weeks only because of child labor laws, it was like super serious and the kids had school. Everybody had school schedules except for Warwick Davis, who had an on-set tutor 4 hours a day. George Lucas actually directed...
Wait, how old was Warwick?
He was a kid, right?
Yeah, teenager. George Lucas directed the reshoots of this movie, which is crazy to think about.
I'm curious what the reshoots
were. He also edited some of the movie. Warwick Davis also shot some of this movie. And Lucas was there for post. So I promise, if you go watch like the version that we put on the Patreon, it definitely is not of the quality of a Hollywood picture, but a lot of those color issues are a lot less flagrant, and it just looks more cheap than it looks like somebody fucked up.
Oh, I firmly believe that any reshoots or any Lucas coming in, he had to have been the guy who said, we need a voiceover.
Well, I don't know. I'm sure they added the voiceover when they needed to make it fucking 97.
It does have like theatrical Blade Runner cut energy because everything else is like to go and have a bunch of characters do scenes where they're speaking an alien language with no subtitles.
Ewokies.
is a confidence that then having a voiceover is again dissonant with real life.
I think they learned their lesson with the holiday special with that. I think Burl Ives is a perfect choice. Like as a solution for this. Maybe it's good. I don't think they nailed like a tone. I don't think he's going to be in the next one. I think the next one's going to be like a proper movie. I have a feeling that we're going to actually like be
I don't
like,
remember it at all. I don't remember it at
I remember
all.
It a lot more than – it's almost like a remake but with like a script. It's almost like
– okay.
It has like characters and a script if I remember correctly.
Color me excited.
And the story is so – they like crashed and they went and found them like – I you believe don't even this, have to re like just
yeah. There is no rehash of the story.
I believe the little girl. I believe the little girl is more in the second one.
She had a thankless role of just being sick and good.
Little dirty like, half the time.
Yeah, for a little kid, she was.
The
good.
Thing is, like kid actors, it's tough because they're not. It's hard to like capture authentic emotion sometimes.
And speaking of capturing authentic things, George Lucas insisted that they actually put an Ewok on a real hang glider, which they did in this movie. That was all real.
That was real.
Yeah.
The shadows on that overhead shot were painted.
The shadows were not. Yeah, but I was so amazed that those Ewoks were on that cliff face. Like, you're telling me I'm going to put that suit on and I'm going to go up there? How much you going to get? I mean, what you going to pay me? Like, I'd be like, you better give me $20,000 to do that because I will.
Well, it sounds like they didn't pay them much.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, what the? How the fuck did they do that? Anyway, the Gorax, this giant.
We're gonna pay you an exposure.
This giant.
But like I'm in a costume, George.
Literally, yeah. Completely covering his entire body.
They'll know.
Yeah,
it's the eyes.
They'll see you in there. They'll see you when you lick your teeth. John Berg is a sort of special effects guy. He designed the Gorax, but the thing is. The Gorax is a stop motion model some of the time, but also
which one is the Gorax?
The big giant,
dog,
the big giant thing, the huge thing.
Oh, okay.
And
it wasn't the dog creature.
The Gorax is the big.
That was
what's
stop
his
motion.
What's his dog?
That looked like a dude in like early Star Trek makeup.
The dog creature was stop motion some of the time.
Yeah, yeah. No, the big like rat dog thing in the beginning. Yeah. Also yeah. Him, but
legitimately, because I will say like there was some interesting stuff. That was pretty. Tight. Like,
it was the last
that sequence was harrowing. Like they like did it. That was like the centerpiece action scene for me.
It was the last piece of ILM made stop motion in the like Harryhausen style before they switched to go motion. If you know what that is, it's like the like version that they used.
I love their like we're gonna call it. It's not stop motion. It's go motion.
Well, it is go motion. It's like filming motion rather than filming stills. If you know what I'm saying. But
I'm sure I'm going to read about it.
I'm not sure in the fan film.
Well, they love to break that down.
It's basically stop. It's basically stop motion. That's a good way of thinking about it.
Okay.
Blast
processing.
But it's like motion. An old school version. And so that's why the monsters in this movie had that kind of like old fashioned quality is because it was.
It's like almost like a frame rate. It's like they have like they move.
It's literally a different technology than go motion.
Yeah.
But also the guy who designed the Gorax is the Gorax,
which that's
is a,
cool.
Which
so
is
he,
a weird.
He understands like a little bit how it work.
Weird like trivia about that. Yeah. Also the original scene with the it's called the Temptor. I think it's called the thing in the tree.
The like snake,
yeah,
the anglerfish fake out thing that we never saw more of.
Originally, it was a flower that pulled him into the ground. That was like the flower was like the top of a creature that pulled him into the ground.
Some Kashyyyk,
yeah,
from
but
the
it's
comics.
Like
level
it's like
stuff.
The same. It's like the same scene, but they shot both ways.
It was like a really bad rabbit Muppet. Then it became a
unless you understood that it was like an anglerfish thing. In my mind, I thought that he went in, he saw this cutie thing, went after it, and then a bigger thing was in there that got him. I didn't know they were angler fishing him.
Oh,
I had no idea they were connected.
That's what I thought. Like it was there to lure him in, and then it wasn't actually that, or it could have been the Force. Who knows? But because there's no real explanation, and it's sort of all over the place.
It's just like I say,
David Lynch.
No one is going to say to you, no, this is real. This happened in the Star Wars universe. Like,
I don't know.
I think that definitely that you'll see her mentioned and the Mace mentioned and the ship mentioned and that there was a crash, but they're not going to talk about the Ewok magic at all.
There was a time, if you remember, that the internet really thought that Phasma was the little girl from this movie.
Dude, for a long time. Thank God she was not.
Why?
Just because it's a blonde girl.
She has like short blonde hair.
And they were like, who else could it be? It must be the girl from Ewok.
They're dumb.
Well, you know, the British accented Jedi ended up being. Actually, does Ian McDiarmid even speak with a British accent like the rest of the Empire?
Yes.
Ian McDiarmid?
When he's like the emperor?
Yes.
No.
We had a little bit of a audio issue here, so we're going to continue the conversation. We were just talking about...
We're going to get...
We're all fine here now.
We're going to get a kind of voiceover what actually happened during this scene.
Yeah. I just want to... I want to say before we move on to the actual plot...
Such as it is.
Yeah. We were talking about... I said... I promised that we were going to talk about Joe Johnston and about like what his where his head was at with this. And he said... Because he was the production designer.
He was
on
like,
this.
Look, I got to be honest. I was thinking about this American hero frozen in ice and how I would tell his story.
I was thinking about how I'd make this and then I would leapfrog to the Rocketeer. And then eventually after making the Mummy, I would be able to finally start.
Wait, he did the Mummy?
Pretty sure. Pretty sure. We can double check.
Got to look this up now.
It's like, no more. I love you too much.
I'm pretty sure he did. He did, like I said, in the watch along. Oh no, maybe he didn't do the Mummy. He did the Wolfman. I'm sorry.
With Benicio?
Yes.
Is it good?
I like that movie with Anthony Hopkins. Yeah, I like that movie. He also did JP3, which is a divided one. But he said the effects we did were pretty primitive. We did forced perspectives and glass paintings, back to basics, things that had been around since the 1920s. George told us to just go out there and have some fun. And last time we were talking about this, you were saying there was disparity because you said something like, decide which it was. Was it that they were going out here and fucking around?
Right now we have three different like explanations for what happened. It's like we were doing this or it was like this.
Yeah.
But this feels like it fits.
Yeah. And I said it wasn't really like an explanation so much as it's just like that's what was going on here was like the idea, the finished product, the movie itself was not the
I believe this one and like especially with how filmmaking was back then where effects took time and you couldn't just be like, let's watch this back or do whatever, like some of that seems to fit. There's some really cool, when they first established that they're like now in the desert, there was like a metal as fuck establishing shot.
Yeah.
And then they were in three different on location deserts and it never was that cool.
Because the paintings are like way better than what they could really do.
But the problem is like, you just made me want this. Like you showed me that this is like where your head was at for a second. And then it was like, now we're just like at the same place where we shoot Power Rangers when they're in the desert.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like I said, and I don't know if I said this or not already, but Marin is local to the Redwoods. It's not like nothing about this shoot. It's like literally like us taking our cameras out to Malibu Canyon and like shooting, you know, you double fist in a Gorn. You know what I mean?
This is you
actually have, funny. We shot so much stuff in Malibu.
Yeah, exactly.
You have not only any blown my mind shot, about this man's work, but I just now discovered that besides obviously Captain America and like all this stuff,
Marketeer,
he's also the director of Steven Universe the movie.
What?
That's what I'm saying, dude. I was like, Steven what is this
Universe
guy
the movie?
The one from like a few years ago?
From 2019. Yes.
He directed that?
Yes.
God. Why didn't Rebecca Sugar?
She probably was heavily involved.
But I love that show.
Yeah.
And I fucking love that movie.
It's a great movie.
This man just like pops up.
He also did Jumanji. I had no clue this man's
The Rocketeer.
CV
yeah,
here. This is impressive.
That's why I was so excited about him being involved and to learn that he's like coming at it from this perspective of like
summer
I said,
camp for the young creatives.
Well, yeah, because I said it's the last ILM. We talked about stop motion and go motion, and we said it's the last ILM stop motion. They had already moved on to.
Go motion,
which is like I believe what like the Tauntaun is. I think. Forgive me if that's not correct, but I think it's
how
more
dare
like
you.
I think go motion is more like what like Jack Skellington is like.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
The it's tough because we just talked for a while and then lost all that. So I'm trying to remember if I said this, but like I guess that fits because also like the production is not the problem. There is some of the lighting and other issues and. They cast it locally.
It's cheapness.
And you just didn't.
It's cheap.
You just like, it's a bummer because like the acting and character consistency of choices is with kids is just not there. But like,
story
it's
just
the
sucks.
Story.
Yeah,
a better story, and it would have been a rad situation. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. So going into the story, right? Like, this is the thesis that I was kind of hitting last time. I don't know if we said it or not, so I'm just gonna reiterate it slightly, which is that we talked about how this was supposed to be 30 minutes, and it became 97 minutes, right? And there's a lot of confusion when you watch the story, because basically the plot of the movie is thusly. It's like they don't explain who Sindel and Mace's parents are. They are just two people that land, and you watch this whole scene where they're like looking for their kids, and then they disappear, and then Sindel and Mace are in the ship that they left from. Davis made a joke about like
my headcanon.
Yeah, like crashing the car and then like not looking in the car for your kids. Which is exactly what happens. We don't – like what this should have been is a story from the Ewoks perspective. What we get is like this like long intro to Mace, who is basically a guest character in the story of the Ewoks that this story really is. And what it's supposed to be is like a fairy tale, right? It's supposed to be like a short story about how everybody goes on a quest and everybody has a little skill that they all have that makes them special and like listening
you
to
learn
each
from each other.
Yeah, listening
and you
to
grow.
Each other. And it's not supposed to be like a beginning, middle, and an end type thing. It's supposed to be more like a 22-minute lesson, like a fable.
If there was a version of this movie
I
where
could
it
cut
was,
it. Yeah.
Where it was like
I don't think with how they shot it, you should cut it to 20 minutes. I don't
but
know if
I could,
that makes any
but
sense.
I could. You know what I mean? And it would feel more, I would just cut out like the first 30 minutes of the movie.
I actually like, if you just cut so much redundant, like get them to the Ewoks faster if you're not
going
to
just start
like,
with one of the many intro scenes that there are for characters.
There are plenty of that like nonsensical, whimsical shots of them messing around that are like, bye.
Yeah, exactly.
If they just scrapped the parents entirely,
yeah,
and made this a film going off of the idea of the Ewoks and them being the main characters, if this was the brother was an older actual rebel pilot, because he's wearing the damn outfit anyway,
dressed like, exactly like Luke,
and he got lost and or captured, and it was about the little girl interacting with the Ewoks, we'd have a more Ewok centered thing. It's a little kid with the Ewoks and searching for the brother. The brother's like, thanks Ewoks, I can take my my sister and go.
And the Ewoks remain, and these are like the Gilligan Island where everybody just
can make it
gets
real
rescued
simple,
except for them. Yeah.
Yeah. And the little girl, she's like, I talk like baby to Ewoks, and the Ewoks are like,
stop teaching. Bruiser! We're teaching.
You know, like, yeah, there's a whole, you could do that, and it'd be fun on that level. But the fact that it's like, I'm an asshole kid, and I don't want to be here. We have to have two escape scenes.
It's like, so, so angsty. Just the performance, which is tough. I get
it. It's not their fault. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, the script does them no favors. It's just a rough thing to spend so much time
just
with.
Just to, I don't want to like go through this movie beat by beat because I really don't think it's necessary, but
I
just
other beats to go by.
I mean, I'm just gonna like knock it out like quick snap. The parents and the kids crash on the planet. Somehow they get separated. The parents get kidnapped by this Gorax, which is this giant, and they get taken off somewhere. And then the kids run into the Ewoks. The Ewoks, meanwhile, you meet Wicket, his dad, and his brothers. The dad, like, they fly in a hang glider to find the two missing kids. You know, they reunite the family. It's just a little scene to meet the Ewoks. Then they all go back
to... Which, by the way, if you were to say, tell the difference between these Ewoks...
No. Impossible. And half of them, their
couldn't
faces
do
don't even move.
Yeah.
Only Wicket...
Couldn't do it.
Only Wicket's like the show car.
It's
he's
really
like the one up... He's supposed to be the one...
He's also the shortest, so he's easy to tell the
he's
difference
supposed
between
to be the one that's, like, the only one that's close to the camera, and so all his friends look like the, like, melting Ninja Turtle suit that you see.
I also thought that Wicket's dad was Wicket the whole time, because you're like, all right, Wicket, Warwick Davis, clearly he's the prominent Ewok in this, and it's like...
False.
No, he just... What?
I think they shot
it. Is it like after the fact, now that Warwick Davis is famous, they were like, no, they did a whole expose on him.
I think they shot that it was, that all the Ewoks were the size of Wicket in the movie. Like, every other Ewok is like never close enough to the camera to like compare them like that. I think Ewoks are supposed to be a little bigger than Warwick Davis actually was at the time. But now he's like a kid because we're like shooting them next to each other.
Sure. It's just weird that like, I thought he would be a bigger, like, cool, this is his star vehicle, and he was, like, sidelined. He didn't even go on the end of the journey. He sat...
Because he's a kid,
It's just weird, too. I don't know. I was like, you're right. He is a kid. It's just like, okay.
It is kind of like the Boba Fetting of Wicket, in that post-movie,
toys were of Wicket.
Yeah.
So people loved Wicket.
And he has a name.
Loved
yeah,
Boba
he has
Fett,
a name now.
But really was insignificant to the overall story and plot.
Right. But I think going forward, we're going to see a little bit more.
It's like he shot you. He shot some in the movie. You're like, why? I don't know. He's so in this movie, given such an unremarkable place that it's
yeah.
just like,
yeah. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, rest of the plot, really quick. So the humans meet up with the Ewoks, Sindel is sick, Mace goes with the Ewoks on like a little mini journey to this tree. The tree turns out
well,
to be...
you're skipping over the really cool action sequence where he's like, hey, I got a fucking gun here, all right?
I got a gun we got from Earth.
Get on the ground and tootsie roll.
Two Ewoks like,
completely take him out.
They roll his knees in half.
It's like the Roldo maneuver.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, they really do it. How long have you been holding on to the Roldo maneuver?
Dude, as soon as you heard it, it was right. That's it. It happened.
Damn.
That's
Damn.
Amazing. So they team up. They go to this tree to get this cure. There's like an anglerfish, like worm in the tree that it was originally the flower. I said that earlier. And then
isn't it a bunny?
It's like, I don't know what
it's like a little tiny animal.
I said it was Bean Bunny.
In my head, it's the Mario 64 bunny.
Yeah, I said it was Bean Bunny, the little cute, like the overly cute rabbit from Muppets. Because it
no, it is, yes.
Yeah, okay. It looks cute, but it turns out to be a big monster. And then they see a vision of their parents in Low Gray's.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa. They get the cure,
yeah.
Go back, give it to the kid in what appears to be...
A blunt wrap.
Yeah, like a blunt wrap.
A giant blunt wrap.
They fall asleep, and then that night, they're like, let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And they run off. The Ewoks just helped them, and they run off. And then they're hunted down by the dog.
Right.
And then the Ewoks brutally murder the dog to save them.
It's like a big fight, but it's not... I mean, brutally murder is...
They
let's
jump
be
on
real.
His back and stab him repeatedly.
Yes.
That was rad. I don't know.
That was cool.
That's like, that is the cool piece. That's the cool action scene. That's the cool creature effects.
It has the Harryhausen.
It has all the stuff. And like, for the size of the kids and the size of the Ewoks, that thing was vicious.
Yeah. And then the Ewoks are like, hey man, why are you running off? Like, we gotta find our parents. They're like,
let's
come with us to this old man.
Yeah, because it's step one of the you need to trust your friend. Whatever. The point is just, they see him in the thing. They go to the thing. They go on this big journey. They give him these little trinkets. Each one of them is like represents their little skill. I talked about how Mace's is like, he's like, it's just a rock. And then Wicket's like, no, you got to like, I can see what's special about your thing. Here you go. You take it. You use it. And then he throws it. And it's like a fucking geode with like a fucking knife inside or some shit. And dude.
Wasn't it like an arrowhead? That
yeah, it was
just,
like
pointed,
it was like a magic
like
arrowhead
move?
That slides around.
That,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it was a compass needle.
But, so they do that.
They had the headpieces.
Yeah.
There was nothing.
They did nothing. They were just cool. Yeah, they were just cool.
It gave them courage.
Yeah.
Don't you understand?
You're right. It's Mike's special sauce or whatever they drink
in
Space Jam.
Yes, exactly. But
what's crazy is they were like, all right, three of you receive these feathers of courage. Go. The rest of you, here is a rock with a thing in it that moves and you follow it.
Yeah.
Here is a gem that can turn into a lizard. There are things that actually did stuff.
Yeah.
And then three of them got screwed with
just
feathers.
Just hats that made them come.
But
on the journey.
But
not,
I guess
not
chaos magic. Like if they thought that they were like, hold on. Now I'm going to fight the Gorax. You're like,
yeah,
is
that
not magic?
Except
that
Wicket. No. Oh, Wicket got the staff that saved them from the water.
The water staff. Yeah. So then they also
made
had
of magical nonsense,
but they also get two things that are for no one yet. That's supposed to be like, you know, you should be friendly to everyone so that you can meet new people and like get new powers on your journey. So they meet Chuck-a-Truck, who's like a woodsman, hermit, ex-warrior, double cheeseburger Ewok.
Love him.
Who
best
rules,
character.
Double. He's like 4'8". He's like a 6'9" Ewok, but he's like 4'8".
Dude.
And he's awesome. He like gives his life by the end of this, which is crazy. And then we meet Kank, who's my favorite character, who's like a absolutely Radagast the Brown ass Ewok priestess mage who can like do illusions or something. I don't know what she can like actually do magic though, because she throws that shit at the gore.
The force exists in everything that's living. It's not crazy that like they. That are like living in nature would tap into it in certain ways. And this feels more in line with like the book kind of cool druid magic
yes,
of,
sure.
of
yes.
the early force stuff, Whereas, like,
it's like not explained all the way. Yeah,
you get visions from the Force just by being able to like put your antenna into it.
Yeah, there's no
rules. So the idea that you could trick people with visions is like, or other things. I mean, that's. It works.
But we don't, we look at it as magic in this because it's supposed to be fantasy.
It's just cooler when there's not like a weird effect of it like pulling.
Yeah, the only difference is like the Force is like, you jump high, you do this. This is almost her being like, fireball.
Yeah, yes.
It's like this close to being just pure fantasy in this story.
Like that she's casting it is what makes it not. Yeah.
Personally,
not like what she's doing with it.
Personally, I love that. I think it's kind of great. Like, again, we bemoan the lack of any sort of like coherent layer to this plot that makes it a cohesive narrative that has motivation for the characters. But like even at the end, they don't even really explain how they get out. Like they go to the Gorax's castle. There's like a big fight with a spider. The Gorax is this giant. They fight it. They use the little fairy that they got from one of the earlier adventures.
We forgot the fairy.
What do you mean?
We forgot there's an entire scene with hundreds of fairies, and they're maybe the best animated thing in the entire damn movie.
They just are also kind of scary looking, like very weirdly designed.
It's very much like an old-timey style thing that like looks particularly scary because it looks like a Sandman cover. Like it's like not Star Wars. It looks like Dave McKean art. Like it does not look like anything real.
It looks like wrong, not in that the effect is bad, but like
it's like Roger Rabbit.
The design of them is like incoherent so with this universe.
I just realized we got feather hats that give courage, a rock to guide, a stick to help pull people out of that weird water, the gem that is used to destroy the stalactite at the end, but I forgot they gave the little girl a candle.
Yeah.
And all that candle seems to have done was lure the fairies, suck them up into it.
And save them.
Save them? Or just trap what all happened? But one?
What happened with that? They literally all went into the candle, and then nothing occurred, and then there was one fairy, and at the end she helps defeat them.
They made friends with her. I was so sure she was going to like, the flame will come and help at the end.
I thought she was
going to
unleash all the fairies. Nothing happened.
They probably were, and then they didn't have budget for that.
Like, nothing happened with that.
The lake thing, which was very weird at the time.
When he gets trapped under the water,
I do think that is conceptually rad. Like, as a Dagobah cave, like as a dark side place that like lures people and steals souls is sick. It just came out of fucking nowhere.
Yeah.
It was so random.
All this stuff that we're saying right now sounds awesome, by the way. Like if you've never seen this, this sounds awesome what we're talking about. But just it's just not awesome. You gotta trust us.
Yeah.
You gotta trust
like,
us.
Like I guess it kind
of was awesome
me
in Lord of the Rings when Frodo went in.
Yeah, I had that thought too. I'm like, well, yeah, there is a rad kind of version. Like it is cool and it plays with like
it's just not motivated by anything.
But the Ewok planet is a great place to play with like the danger of nature and in a hype like an enhanced way where it's like this is alien, so it's crazier. There's force.
Right.
But they're just like whatever. It's just not the right place for this.
Like you can't like the mistake here. And like I say, I don't like this. I don't think they did a good job with this. I just am seeing it for what it is. I'm just seeing it for what it is.
From the trees.
I'm just seeing it for what it is. But like, oh my God.
Waited for it. Waited for the pound.
He just went in for the pound. Imagine you should go on Bake Off. You just reach out the hand for the handshake each time. You'd be like,
I wanted the fist bump.
I know. It was the same thing.
It's different.
Okay. What the fuck was I just talking about?
You just derailed everything.
What the fuck was I just talking about?
Seeing the forest from the
trees. I can barely hold my thoughts together as it is. We were talking about Goldilocks and the Three Bears. The reason this movie is not strong, doesn't achieve the thing, is because of the fact that it was a little idea that they didn't really put in the legwork to make into a big idea. Like if they tried to make a movie of the Goldilocks and the Three Bears story where they fill out everything, except the whole point of the movie is just that she tries the three things.
It is every single time they take a, it's like the Cat in the Hat or like any Seuss movie.
Yes.
When you watch the live action version.
All the other shit's like dumb as fuck.
They added 45 minutes of a plot that was not in the books.
Yeah.
That's this.
Yeah, exactly.
They just like, they had all of the pieces to make a much more successful TV movie about this. It's just like,
the only thing missing
is like, in so many ways, it's like, the script is king. This is like a thing that we forgot. Even though for a long time, they knew. And that was like, there's always bullshit and other stuff. Like, it's not that simple.
There
but
are
like,
things about it
but
that's
the
good.
Scripts
yeah.
were like, just what are we? What's actually happening? Cool, we have that. Great, let's now window dress it with all the cool parts of whatever. And this is like, we have all the cool things.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Let's just string it together.
But like I say, I think by the end of this, we're gonna find that we begrudgingly accept this crucible of Ewoks and droids. I think so. I believe in the talent, and I believe that this is the worst that it will be. That's what I think.
Knowing that the Ewoks animation and droids animation is coming,
I've seen the people who've worked on it. The names. I'm happy about it. I'm not saying we won't enjoy
everything being like valid. Like I now know that what I used to be like, that's not Star Wars, is like, that's not fitting with my preferred version of Star Wars. But like, I had Hudson Hawk for the Game Boy. That game sucks. And the movie
is worse.
I shouldn't have watched it. It kind of ruined the game for me. But like, you could still have a great time out of things. So it's like, fine, we're going to watch it as adults and it's not going to resonate with us.
Sure.
But it's like, I bet somebody was like, dude, this is great. And then they watch the old movies after and they're like,
I just don't think we're going to have a miserable time like we keep saying we are. I feel I'm equally trepidatious.
I don't think we'll have a miserable time. We didn't have a miserable time watching this.
This was not good, though.
Oh,
this was not.
It's not good.
This was
but
not worth watching.
I think all of us sat there and enjoyed how utterly insane the whole thing was. We laughed. We had a good time.
Next time I'm going to eat before.
Yes.
That's the biggest problem was that
he just kept making burger face at me. He just kept putting fake burgers in his mouth.
But like that, we're going to be in this place for a little bit of it's not good Star Wars. And to say it is good would be a lie to everyone, because it's not. The next Ewok movie isn't good. Is it better than this?
If you accept that there's...
Everything has to
if
be.
You accept is, the,
if we accept oversimplifying things to good or bad,
no.
It's not good.
If you accept the idea that that Ewoks as like a fantasy thing set in the land of Endor, where, you know, like little childlike stories play out, little fables play out. If you accept that could have a good story in it and that there could be something, I think we can like get on the level of this stuff. But I think I'm hoping that this version of it, which is again like almost like not a fully formed one, I think the next year's special is a lot more cohesive. If my memory serves, it has like a plot.
They're basically the Rabbids to Rayman that I didn't have to live through. As a Rayman lover, and then Rabbids became popular, you're like, no, not these idiots. Go back to the good stuff.
But the Ewoks of these stories don't really do the bits of the Ewoks. They're not like, yeah, and that's like all they're doing. Like they have a heart.
A lot of bits.
But they're cute.
So much bits.
They're cute. They're funny, but there's like action.
They speak basic.
They teach friendliness. They have, you know, like the Rabbids never like, just like hang out and like hug and like aren't assholes. You know what I mean?
No, but I will say like in the movies, though, at least, like, I don't know, them being a, like, tribal teddy bear species that is, like, wants to eat these bigger creatures but then sees technology and thinks it's deity, like, that is, like, a more fully formed concept of a creature than now it's like, all right, well, let's see them in their day-to-day life and then it...
Where they believe in magic. Right?
I guess. I don't know. Like, they have human animals, like, livestock... There's like, it's a weird, the world that they zoom in on is like weird to me. It's like a...
But also it's the first time we see Wicket's family, apparently, unlike anyone else, does not live in the trees.
No.
They live on a farm on the outskirts of the forest. And they just did not want to do... Oh, 100%. Yeah. But then the fact that we go there and we're like back up in the trees, it's like, oh, that's fun. We're back here. But yeah, it is weird that the reason why this species would live in the trees is because if they live in the grounds, predators would eat their asses.
Yeah.
They're fucking teddy bears.
Yeah.
Also,
and they used to be Wookiees, which is
also
why they were in the trees.
Right, yeah. Sure.
Screw the movies, because Endor was real. And the Forest Moon is actually like seven distinct biomes that have video game-like cutoff points.
Yeah. Yeah. Northern California, yeah.
Well, I mean, as we discussed in the film... The reason why is because moons do not operate the same rules as Star Wars planets. Planet, one biome.
Dude.
Moons.
Real.
Real.
Yeah.
The realist.
Real. Yeah.
Planets. Moons are your childhood friend that their parents let them do anything and you're like, you get to say shut up? You get to like, what?
Wait, how did you? I don't understand.
You're like, that's not fair.
So
you get to do different things.
So when the knife was made, you already knew where the Death Star was going to land? on the Endor moon?
No, no, it's not the moon of Endor. That's a different planet.
Of Endor.
Of the Endor
system. Another Endor moon.
Yeah. I hope so.
Well, regardless of what would...
In Rise of Skywalker or in this one?
In Rise of Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker was a different planet, right? In the Endor system.
I don't... regardless
of... My brother in the Force... I don't fucking... No one knows. Somehow, Palpatine returned. Somehow.
With a dagger that led directly
if you guys
to
know,
the crash site.
If you guys want to know
the Death Star
why we didn't finish...
Before it was destroyed.
If you guys want to know why we didn't finish the new Canon Book Club...
Sorry. The dark side, I have to keep it at bay, but sometimes it flares up. And I love that he saw fucking weird-ass puppet emperor and was like, I'm going to be Victor Frankenstein next. I think that's my next move is to create this monster.
The crazy thing is that Oscar Isaac is like now like, speaking of Victor Frankenstein, like, fuck Disney. That's crazy.
Yeah. His whole like, I would do another Star Wars, but not for Disney.
Yeah.
It's a wild. I was like, all right then.
I'll make you a movie star.
That's crazy.
I'll put you in a picture.
Anyway, this is the Caravan of Courage, Ewok movie number one. The next one's coming real quick. It's the next thing that we're doing.
Great.
And it's going to be a similar thing. You can go get the watch along on Patreon, and it'll be there probably pretty soon. You can already watch this one, and it's a nice video version now. So you can like see it as we talk.
Yeah, if you don't believe what we just said to you occurs in this film, by all means, go watch.
Yeah. Or watch it
enjoy.
Or watch it with good audio on Disney Plus or wherever the fuck you steal it from. And I don't know. More Star Wars. I'm as excited to be through with this as I am to see what the next one is.
Sure.
I can't wait. And what is up next? After the battle for Endor, we have, let's see.
I can't wait to find out what madness we're delving into.
I believe that it's just pretty straightforward. I think we have like one more comic, so it's like right now we're in.
I'll need the palate cleanser, which is
we've got Caravan of Courage, then we've got Battle for Endor, which is a different team who made it. Then we've got the Droids TV show, which we're going to do one season of. Then we're going to do a Q&A. Then we're going to do the last Marvel comic. Then we got Ewoks season 1 and 2.
So there's only one season of Droids?
There's one season of Droids, 2 seasons of Ewoks.
Same team?
No. Ben Burtt is the guy who like made the Droids show weirdly. Like the sound guy, Ben Burtt, who made like the lightsaber sound and shit. He is like the guy who made the Droids show. The Ewok show. The Ewok show has like.
Could you imagine Paul Dini? Guys like, I got an idea, and they're like, millions. Go do it.
Ewoks TV show, Paul Dini involved.
That's what I'm excited for.
So who knows? Who knows what this was? I've never watched those as a grown person in my life. I have like the vaguest memories of those TV shows from when I was like the youngest boy. Do you know what I mean? I don't even. Like, it feels like going back to watch the Care Bears.
I know what your eternal hope is, and I love that for you.
Look, we're going to love this, you guys.
I'll appreciate it on an artistic level.
Yeah.
But on a level of good, nothing we're about to do.
That's what I'm trying to focus on. I think I'm just going to eat my burgers before we watch it.
It's just going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot of
coming
watching.
Coming with a full stomach and open heart.
We're going
to
be
I came hungry
a lot.
To, like, take in the Ewok movie, like, fairly and not just be, like, a dick about it. Like, my post-Wii U revelatory, like, let's accept it for what it is, but then it also still was a massive disappointment.
It wasn't very good, but you should open it up and scroll through it and look at the neat backgrounds, because I was joking about it during, but I think actually Joe Johnson is the best part of this, because he like, went back and did, like, an exercise in, like, old-timey filmmaking techniques for TV, and there's a lot of cool shit in there.
Yeah, actually, I will say, I don't like watching bad movies, like, when I watched The Room, I didn't think, this is so funny. I was like, this is a bad movie. There's so many good pieces of art. I would rather do that. Why isn't that elevated?
Art's art, dude.
But this could be like a Room watch. If you, like, it is bad every second. So if you like that kind of stuff and you like Star Wars, this might be your The Room of Star Wars.
It's not low quality. It's just not that good. And I think you'll like probably.
It's like absurd. Plot twists are absurd, and then character. The actors, dude, The parents,
yeah,
especially, are like,
they might not even be American.
Oh,
I don't know who
Mace.
Yeah, I don't know who. They sounded like Borat a little bit. Like they had like a slight tinge of Borat to their voice. I don't know what that was about.
They're local to Marin, and I know that's got a big like Greek population.
they could
learn something new every
day. You should bring your Nintendo Switch if you're gonna watch The Caravan of Courage.
A solid check out what's going on the internet while you watch.
Throw on Final Fantasy and do some grinding. Something a little bit.
Yeah.
So that you don't.
Or go on Grindr and do some Final Fantasy.
Yeah. And make it your Final Fantasy.
Yeah, whatever,
on Grindr.
Whatever works for you.
You impressed him.
So good.
He liked that.
God,
he liked that.
That's good.
He liked that better than the Caravan of Courage.
That's so much better than the Forest and the Trees.
I like it. It was good. That was good.
Yeah.
It was solid.
This is episode whatever of the Old Cannon Book Club. Thanks for listening.
Broken.
We'll be back with hopefully a better version of this episode next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
The Star Wars Old Cannon Book Club is made possible by contributions from our listeners at patreon.com/SWOCBC. Thank you for your support. This month's Patreon Masters of the Force are Ian Berenade, Trevor Isom, Patrick Rowland, Amy Wakai, Jazz Owl, Peacetime Mando, and Metroid Mike. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with a discussion about our next selection, Ewoks, Battle for Endor, a television film by Ken and Jim Wheat. This episode was edited by Alex Del Campo and Alex Fasciani. The theme song is Venus, the Bringer of Peace by Gustav Holst, performed by the U.S. Air Force Heritage of America Band. Original show art by Jackie Whistler. See you next time.